Now, to our brother Ken, who's come all the way from Brazil, let me kind of give you a quick introduction to our brother Ken. As I mentioned, he's from Brazil, and he's been with the Brahma Kumaris for 40 years. He's been teaching meditation, Raja Yoga meditation. He's actually written many books as well. He's actually written, which I've got here, which I was quite amazed. He's actually written about 15 books. So you might want to go down to the bookshop and try and browse through which ones he's written. And the other thing, he's actually written in 9 different languages. As you can see, he's actually kind of covered most of us here, yeah? Okay, without me babbling on, can I ask kindly, Brother Ken, if you'd like to come on stage and take over? And if you'd like to... Thank you.
Okay, great. She didn't mention I'm from Australia, so you picked that up in my first phrase. Right. Let's have some silence. Just so that we're on the same wavelength. When you're asked to stop for a minute or two silence, what happens in your mind? Are you able to do it, or it just keeps on charging ahead? What happens? Too much activity, or too much jumping around from one thing to the other? Probably, right? So we learn to, in our lives, we learn to walk, we learn to speak, we learn to maybe sing, we learn to ride a bicycle, so many things, but no one ever teaches us how to think. We have to learn that for ourselves. Probably because our teachers, our parents, also didn't know, right? They didn't know how to do it. I was sitting here, first of all, this particular talk, we've got an information center in the front of Harvard University in Massachusetts, USA. And we managed to get for the first time the auditorium of the Harvard Law School to do a talk. And they wanted me to do it, and they wanted a topic. So I just said this from the top of my head, I suggested this one. So and this particular topic came up because about 2014, yeah, about 6 months before the World Football Cup in Brazil, I was doing a talk with the airport authority. And I asked them, you know, because they were really stressed out of their minds, because the World Cup would be happening in 10 different cities, and that meant 10 different airports that had to be sort of upgraded to receive so many people from all over the world. And they were behind schedule on all of the airports. And so I was with the top people, and we were, you know, I was talking to them about funnily enough, they wanted a topic of one of my books, which was Peace Starts With You. That's the name of the book. Peace Starts With You. Unusual, right? But and I asked them, okay, if they could consider that our minds are like airports, because a lot of stuff comes in, lands and takes off continually. And which was the busiest airport in Brazil, I asked them. They said, well, it was the domestic airport in São Paulo, which is the biggest city. São Paulo's only got 20 million people, so small town, right? I think to get from one side to the other is like 100 kilometres. But on the rush hour, there's a flight every 90 seconds, you know, coming in or going out. And I said, okay, if our minds were like airports and we had, you know, 1,000 minutes of waking time a day, because in a day of 24 hours there are 1,440 minutes, right? So let's say we spend 440 minutes resting, and there's 1,000 minutes left over for, you know, waking, doing time. And if we had a flight coming in or going out in the airport of the mind every 2 seconds, that'll be 30,000 flights in a day. If you have one every second, it's 60,000, and so on. If you have one little bit of something every half second, that's 120,000 bits of stuff floating around in our minds, you know, memories, inspirations, sensations, ideas, thoughts, feelings, everything, you know. And generally it's an incredible jumble, isn't it, you know. So many things are going on. And when we meet other people, it's a sort of a, you know, it's a wonder that we can actually communicate, because there's a lot of competition. For me to have a clear idea, I have to shove things aside. I have to put things out of the way. I have to concentrate. Concentration is not a good thing, you know. Even with these days of multitasking, where you know someone's listening to music, doing their homework, and watching the TV at the same time. What happens? And the studies show that if you're brought up doing that sort of thing, by the time you're 25, you've got absolutely no concentration at all. You can't concentrate on anything. Anything. And our attention span is getting less and less, you know. You can pay attention for, say, in the past you could pay attention for about 45 minutes on a particular topic, now it's only 20, you know. And then you start to sort of fade out. There's too much competition, right? And besides that, you know, and I'm going to tell a story here that probably sets the ground for what I'm going to say. I have quite a busy life, because I coordinate the Brahmakumari centres in Latin America, so a lot of countries and a lot of our centres. And besides that, I've always kept, since it's voluntary work, I had to work. I don't receive money from the organisation, never, right? So I've had to work. And I've worked as a business consultant at quite a high level. Big multinationals, governments, ministries like that. And so I'd written a book called Human Values in the Workplace. And somehow or the other, the HR director of the central bank in Brazil got a copy, and she got in touch with me and said, can you come to the central bank in Brasilia, which is the capital, and give a talk about the subject of the book, what our values in the workplace. I said, sure, why not? I got there the day before the talk, because I knew that they were going to televise it. They have a corporate university, so they're going to televise it to the units of the central bank throughout the country in the state capitals. And I thought, you know, what am I going to talk about? How am I going to work this? And as I walked into the building, I saw these big posters on the wall. And the posters were about a campaign for people to be more careful when they handle paper money. You know, instead of handling paper money any old how and sort of messing up the notes, right? Sometimes we get bank notes, horrible, right? Somebody has written on it or sort of taped up or sometimes. And they figured that if everyone sort of were okay with this campaign, they'd save $30 million in 3 years of printing costs. Because money costs, you cost money to print money, right? And I said, aha, this is what I'm going to do. That night I took a photocopy, a coloured photocopy of a 100 real note, which was in those days about $50. And in the middle of the talk I pull it out of my pocket. I don't want to have one here, but let's imagine this is it, right? And I said, look, I'm feeling very generous today. I want to offer this $50, 100 reals, to anyone who wants it. Who wants it? About five or six people immediately put their hands up. And the lady who'd organised everything, the HR director, she was explaining the campaign to me the day before. I was curious, right? So I said, okay. I was courting arrest in the central bank with a fake note, right? But I thought I'd get away with it. And so I said, okay, you want this note? Well, what if I do this to it? And the lady started, almost had a heart attack. You know, what about the campaign? You shouldn't do this. Everyone's watching. She was trying to whisper to me. I said, but you still want it to the people who had put their hands. You still want it? It's sort of a bit messed up. Do you still want it? What do you think they said? Yeah. Then I threw it on the floor, jumped on it, and picked it up and said, do you still want it? Yes. And then I opened it up. This is the ultimate blasphemy. All the cameras are on me, and I did this. It's like burning the flag, right? I was expecting the federal police to jump in at that moment. I said, do you still want it? And I pulled out some sticky tape from my pocket. I'll give you some sticky tape as well. You still want it? They said, yeah, you can change it at the central bank. And I said, you know, I would never do that to a real banknote. This is a fake one. And then the lady really had a heart attack. It's a fake note. What are you doing in the bank with a counterfeit note? See, yeah, well, I would rip it up, wouldn't I? But the thing is, what I wanted to say is that no matter what I did to the note, it continued having the same value, right? And I said, that's how we are. That's where our values start. Because I have an inner state. I have an inner truth, an inner reality that does not change with circumstances. And no matter if the world screws me up or jumps on me or tears me in half, I continue to have same value. Definitely our excess of thinking is related to not understanding or not experiencing our true value, as human beings, as children of God, as embodiments, in fact, of those divine qualities at a deeper level. We've forgotten them, actually. We've forgotten them. And so when we go out into the world, we really don't know who we're supposed to be. Which me am I going to be today? You know, which mask am I going to put on? You know, there's a meeting, there's a, you know, at work I have to put on a certain mask, then I get home, put on another mask, and I go to the club or go to the football match and I put on another one. But who am I behind all of these masks? Maybe the mask is smiling, but am I smiling behind it, right? And then when we look at ourselves, it's even more of a problem, right? What do we see when we look inside? What means inside, even? Is it really inside the head, or is it inside the chest? It's really not a physical inside, is it? It's a spiritual inside. And I really go with the phrase of the French theologian called Teilhard de Chardin, who said that we are spiritual beings passing through a human experience and not human beings looking for a spiritual one. So if I'm this spiritual being going through this human experience, who am I? You know? And if I can't see that, then definitely I'll have to think more. If things become clearer, I will have to think less. If I become more stable, I won't have to, you know, that internal sort of register that's creating 100,000 bits of flotsam and jetsam, as they say, every day. Bits and pieces of my life floating around and competing for space. They say that a conflict is when two people try to occupy the same place at the same space at the same time. What about inner conflict? There's one part of me fighting with another part of me, and the space is called the mind. It's the battlefield. So the problem is not the battlefield. It's not the field. It's what happens there, right? That's the problem. So it's not my mind is bad. It's the quality of my thinking which is bad or good, right? But we don't see things. We have a very narrow vision. We're narrowed down to our perception by, first of all, the physical consciousness. I am so-and-so, I did this, I grew up here, this happened, that happened, and now this, I'm going through this, and what am I going to do tomorrow? You know, all of the whole story of the ego, right? Which is unstable, which is sort of unresolved, shooting all over the place. We say, I'm looking for myself in my own head. It's weird, isn't it? I mean, when we try to find ourselves in other people, it's even worse, right? Will you give me the happiness that I'm not giving myself? Will you give me the love that I'm not able to give myself? This is what creates this incredible sort of surge of useless thinking. And if you made a calculation, how much of our thinking is useless or unproductive? How much? What percentage is actually useful? What do you reckon? 5%. 5%. Anyone less than that? 3%. Okay, yeah. Pretty much. Studies show that 97% of our worries are actually unfounded. They're not connected with reality at all. They will never happen. So 97% of the time that you're worrying about something, Today I was talking to the guy who brought me here in the car from London, and he was asking me about a situation. I said, look, you know, when we're looking at others, we're putting ourselves as others. Why are you judging someone else? Why are you trying to understand their motives? Ah, but he's going through a really hard time. people are sort of fooling him behind his back. What should I do? He's asking me a question. I said, how do you know he's being fooled? And he said, well, if I were him, I would be being fooled. I said, well, you're not him. This whole story of trying to put yourself in someone else's shoes is ridiculous, because when you're in that other person's shoes, you are you. Still. Right? You'll never be the other person. And I told him a story. I've got a friend who is, you know, in it. There's a very unfortunate statistic in my part of the world. Of the 50 most violent cities in the world, it's not Baghdad, it's not, Damascus. The 50 most violent cities in the world, 41 of them are in Latin America. That's the number of homicides per 100,000 inhabitants. And 21 of them are in Brazil. So it's a pretty violent place. People walk around shooting each other, right? You can't even imagine, actually, in this part of the world. Only 4 of those cities are in the USA. So 45 of the 50 are in the Americas. So I've got a friend who's, and generally if you get robbed and you sort of resist or you interfere, they just shoot you, you know. If you get held up at the street light, hand over your money, if you sort of resist, they'll shoot you. That's how it is. Don't resist arrest. Don't resist being robbed. That's the story. So I've got a friend who is lying in his bed, right? A thief comes in and starts, putting objects into a bag from his room. He's awake. He realizes there's someone else in the room. While the thief goes busily about, shoving stuff into the bag, and he, doesn't do anything. Doesn't lift a finger to interfere with the thief. Why? Why? Huh? He's afraid, right? Any other reason? He values his life. Any other reason? He's not attached to his valuables? Maybe. But what if I told you that he's this little friend, he's only 6 months old? What did you do when I told the story, when I asked the question? Huh? You put yourself in the bed, right? If I were him, I would be afraid. You said what you would do. And we do that all the time. All the time we imagine, we conjecture, we judge, we, create a whole reality that's not real at all. You know, if you look at this, what is it? You can't see it. Often now, the problem is so close to the problem we can't see it. But it's a bit of the crown of the cock, right? The rooster. And, there's a kid looking through the window at this rooster in a farmhouse, right? So there's a bigger context, The rooster in a farmhouse, which in fact is not a farmhouse, it's a model. So the rooster's actually wooden, right? But not even wooden, because that's the cover of a book. It's not a model, it's a cover of a book in the hand of a kid who's sort of relaxing, right? Next to a swimming pool, but it's actually not even a swimming pool, it's the deck of a ship. But it's not even the deck of a ship, it's an ad on the side of a bus, right? And not even that, it's actually a scene on a TV set. And guys watching, which is actually not even a scene on a TV set, it's a stamp. And it's on a letter that's just been delivered. And the guy that delivered it, right, sort of just goes away and 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 away. So the distance between that little spot that's floating around the universe called Earth and the, you know, that microscopic vision of a bit of the crown of a rooster. How often do we see the big picture? How often? When you collapse all of the boundaries, right? Can you see any? You can't even see the countries on this sized earth, right? And when you look at the different countries, you don't see lines on the map, you know? So there's a reality that goes on without our without our judgments and prejudices, right? That yet we live within them. People aren't intrinsically Buddhists or Hindus or whatever. People are not intrinsically English or Welsh or Scottish or Australian or Brazilian, just as the animals aren't, right? Yeah. If there's a butterfly living on the border of France and Belgium, is it a Belgian butterfly or a French one? Huh? You know, recently I did a tour of some countries in Latin America. It was really strange because, and this is what I'm saying, is that there's an understanding of reality that doesn't need so many words. And if Plato said thinking is the soul talking to itself, but actually we don't need just to think in words. And that's what our problem is. There's an unceasing commentary on life that goes with us when we're looking at things and doesn't shut up, you know. And it just goes on and on and on about everything and everyone, right? And what's going to happen, what's not going to happen, what did happen, what will happen, what could happen, what would happen, you know. And because of our inherent instability, we have excess thinking. We think too much. And we think too much unnecessarily about everyone and everything, especially ourselves. So I asked this question in Colombia, what's the national bird? They said the condor. It's a big eagle, right? Condor. Then in Argentina I asked, what's the national bird? It's a condor. I didn't know, I asked, right? And then a little bit later I was in Peru, what's your national bird here? They said the condor. Then I went to Chile, what's your national bird here in Chile? The condor. In Bolivia, what's your national bird? The condor. I said, well, if I were a condor, I'd have a sort of an identity crisis, you know. I wouldn't know if I'm Colombian, Argentinian. Next week, in fact, I'm going to Venezuela. I'm going to ask the same question. So the condor doesn't even know there's a condor, let alone a Bolivian one or an Argentinian one, right? In the same way, who am I intrinsically, you know? And is there even a reality behind this physical space? And there is actually. There are other dimensions. There's that dimension that the Christians call heaven, or the Buddhists call Nirvana, or the Hindus call Shantidam. There's this other dimension of light that when we pray, and once I did a trip many years ago, even before knowing Brahma Kumaris, I travelled from Australia to Europe, mostly over land, right? In that way I cut across all of the major religions. And you know what? I watched people and took pictures of people praying. And mostly they also had rosaries, different. So hands and prayer, that's what I took pictures. If you look, I looked at the pictures later on. And if there were nothing said, right, you would say, well, these people are doing the same thing. Right? Right? So if a Buddhist tries to get to his nirvana, or a Christian tries to get to to where God is, they're both trying to get to the same place, right? From different angles, right? Now let's, if I were in the middle of my life, right? And let's do a little exercise here. Look at the picture, right? This is sort of a living mandala. Go to the center of your life. I'm going to conduct a little exercise here. Just keep your hands free for a minute. If you're writing, stop writing. You don't need to close your eyes even, but you have to sit nicely, right? And just look at this diagram. So physically, we're in the center of 360 degrees of stuff, right? We can hear things around us. We're aware of colours and shapes. We're aware of the temperature and our own body, our breathing. But we're also in the center of our lives, not just physically in the center of 360 degrees of stuff. I'm in the center of my life, my connections, my relationships, my situations. It's like a network spreading out from me. Now, if I were stable, that whole network would become stable. If I became still, I would make my whole network a little bit more calm. For example, I'm sitting in the center of my life, and I just bring up on the screen of my mind my family, my nearest family, not the extended family, just mother, father, husband, wife, kids, okay? Brothers, sisters, the close family. So there I am, there in front of me. I'm feeling very stable, and I'm just spreading that out to them. And it does have an impact. Yeah? Now I switch to my work. Maybe I work at home. Maybe I'm just a housewife or a house husband. Some people are like that. Looking after things. Maybe I have a home office. But maybe I work in another office, and there are my colleagues and my clients. You know, maybe I have a shop. So I picture my workplace and the people there. And again, as I become calm, that also becomes calm. Then let's look at nature. Let's sort of feel for the planet at the moment, because it's going through a hard time, really. Global warming. Last year was the hottest year in history. 2014 was then the hottest year in history until last year happened. Things are not going very well. So let me just send out some good vibes to the environment, right? And my own health. Okay, this body, this vehicle that I have, if I become calm, this would definitely have a good impact on all of the hormones and the metabolic functions, for sure. It's because of mental stress that there are physical problems. So if I become calm, that has a very good effect on my body as well, and therefore my health. What about my spirituality, my connection with God, or my connection with my own development as a human being, the improvement of my character? If I become calm, then I can actually connect with a deeper reality. If I become calm, I can connect with the one who's the ocean of peace, which is God, really. I can do it. So you see, you know, you can you can do it. But the problem is we look at the world through a keyhole. You know, the three limiting factors are you can, and this will come out of the exercise, but just the body limits us. We were talking about 3% of useful thinking. We're only able to perceive 3% of the electromagnetic spectrum also, you know, between red and violet, right? We don't see anything before red and we don't see anything after violet of the colours of the electromagnetic spectrum. We don't see X-rays, gamma rays, microwaves. We don't see any of that. And we definitely don't see vibrations, right? Though they exist. So if we could see vibrations, we would be pretty protected from grumpy people, right? Right? You could see from a distance this person's in a bad mood, right? If thoughts had a smell, right? They definitely would be able to avoid the ones that have a bad smell, right? But we can't see it, we're not aware. We're very sort of limited to these eyes, which don't work so well. Dogs can smell better than us. They can hear better than we do, right? I think even flies can see better than we do. They've got 1,000 eyes, a fly. You know that? They're absolutely aware of movement. And a bat can get around in the dark just by sending out sonar rays, right? Waves. So the body limits our perception. We look at the world through this keyhole. Our role consciousness, I am the boss, I am the father, I am the mother, I am the one. That limits us. And our own story limits us. So I was born, I grew up, this happened, that happened. My parents fought a lot, they got divorced, that really affected me. Then I went to university, I scraped through, I managed to get a pretty horrid degree and then got a job and this happened, that happened. Now I'm wanting to learn to meditate. Right? That whole story doesn't fit when I sit down to meditate. I'm not a story with legs. I'm not a CV or a resume with legs, right? I'm not what I've done. I am what I am. And to really cut to the chase, as they say in the States, you know, really get to the essence of things. There's a really great story that I heard recently. A Zen monk spent 5 years in silence meditating. Just looking at the wall, you know. And when he went back to the monastery, the fellow monks asked him, okay, what have you learned in your 5 years of silence? And he said, very solemnly, I've learnt that noses are vertical and eyebrows are horizontal. What do you mean? No, that's it. What he was saying is that I have learnt that everything is as it is. If I can do that, you know, right? Things are, people are. People are not what I think. People are not what I think they are. Situations are not what I think they are. I don't see the world as it is. I see the world as I am. So if 5 people live in the same house, how many houses are there? If 5 people live in the same house, how many houses are there? There's one house, but how many versions of that house? So there are actually 6 houses. There's the house as it really is, and there are another 5 versions of it. And each one will have a different idea. What the work means, what the house means, what London means, what New York means. A friend of mine wanted an exotic holiday and said, well, why don't you go to India? This many years ago. I can give you all of the contacts, you know, that you go here, go there. We sat down and set out an itinerary. She was very happy. She was going to go with another friend. And she arrived in Delhi on the day that Rajiv Gandhi was assassinated. There were riots in the street. She couldn't leave her hotel for 4 days. When they liberated them, right, they could leave the hotel. She went straight to the airport and left India. Then when I met her again, I said, how was your trip to India? She said, don't talk to me about India, you know. But if she had arrived the week before, right? Yeah. It probably would have worked out lovely. Oh, it was fantastic. So it's, everyone has their own angle on things. And the difficulty is that we don't see the reality behind things. You know, there's other dimensions which are behind the sort of thing. But we see the world like that. And when we talk to someone else, right, they're seeing the world like that. You know? And we're saying, can't you see? It's so clear. So, what are you, an idiot? Can't you see it? And the person said, no, I can't see it at all. Why can't they see it? They're not seeing the same thing. So, right? Does that happen? Have you ever had a talk with someone and it seems like you're talking to the wall? They completely misunderstand everything you're saying. Why? They're seeing a different angle, that's all. Now, if both of you had the door open and not looking through the keyhole, you probably wouldn't need to talk. If things are clear, you don't think about them anymore, right? Is that right? We think and think and think in order to clarify things so that we don't need to think anymore. It's funny, isn't it? We talk and talk and talk and talk so as not to talk. Right? We do and do and do and do, then we have to retire from doing. So I have to open my perception, right? I am this soul, I am this God's child, I have these divine qualities that I've forgotten, I have this inheritance anyway. Actually, I've got two inheritances. One is the divine inheritance, and the other one is the inheritance from my own past, right? Where I've come from, what I've done. You know, the reaping and the sowing. That's also an inheritance. Who's responsible for the reaping? Me, right? Because I sowed something. I planted some seeds. Now, look what's happening. So I have to open my perception. I have to go beyond my little roles because I have a bigger role, you know. If these things are clear, I will definitely think less and think better. And if I can do that, I will feel great, you know. Just, if you look at this microphone, what's its purpose? What's the purpose of a microphone? To amplify the voice. What's the purpose of this remote control? It's just to change the slides, right? What's the purpose of the projector? To project, what's the purpose of the light? What's the purpose of the chair that you're sitting on, right? You don't find the chair pretending that it's a light or a microphone thinking that it's a door, right? Do you? So in the same way, what's my purpose? Is it clear like that? Is it as clear as that? Purpose is not something, in the deeper real purpose of our life is not something you invent. It's something you discover. It's already there. If I'm a child of God and my you know, I'm a peaceful being, what's my purpose? Huh? You know, you don't have to be a rocket scientist to understand that one. If I'm a peaceful being, what's my purpose? Right? If love is one of my deeper qualities, what's my purpose? See, love, purpose is connected with identity, isn't it? So I have a bigger role. You know, I can do that through the role of mother, father, boss, you know, partner, whatever. I'm a peaceful being. I can do that through any other role, because these other roles are secondary to my big one. Serve others. That's our vocation. We will feel best when we're actually being useful. We will feel best when we're actually serving, giving benefit to others. We will feel best. If I'm giving benefit, I will think less. Right? If I'm not, they say the empty mind is the devil's workshop, right? Let's occupy ourselves with giving, and then we don't need to think too much. What's going to happen? How is it going to happen? Why this? Why that? How am I going to survive? All of that, if you are basically a giver, the universe will look after you. If you're a taker, it won't. You'll have to struggle and break your head. Yeah. So the other one is, you know, the story. I've been a protagonist of many different stories. I've done it. I've been there. I've opened the book, right? So, you know, I have to go into this sort of... we're going to have a meditation in a minute. We're going to go through this. We've got the world meditation starting. And we're going to go beyond our bodies. We're going to go beyond our roles. We're actually going to go beyond our story and, you know, be useful for the world, right? This is the wrong one, yeah. I thought it was the right one, but she put the wrong one on, yeah. This is the one I want, yeah. Here we are. Just to finish off. We've got a retreat centre in upstate New York, near Albany, in the Catskill Mountains. And there's a sort of a little lake there, right? So one morning I'm walking by, and it was so still, right? The little lake had become like a mirror. So I took a photo. And for me, that's where things start. If I can calm myself down, for me, that's the essence of silence. If I stop struggling and stop charging ahead and stop making so many questions, and I can see the real thing behind what's happening and the real thing behind people, then I will become still. And then in that stillness, I am able to reflect. So, you know. Then I did something very naughty. Look, I threw a rock into the pond. What happened to the image? It's distorted, right? It's fractured, fragmented. So in a way, when I become calm, suddenly I throw a rock into my own mind. You know, I can't see anymore. I can't reflect anymore. So I'm forced to interpret. And when I'm forced to interpret and imagine and conjecture and sort of wonder, that's when my thinking starts to pick up again. You know, the too much thinking. When it becomes clear, don't need to think anymore. Okay? So what we're going to do, we're going to go back to that exercise. The one where we go beyond our physical body, we go beyond our roles, and we go beyond our own story, and we embrace a different reality, and from there we send out peace to the world, which is so much needing it. So we're going to have an hour meditation. I'm going to sit here for 15 minutes, guide some thoughts, and then there'll be some beautiful images taking over. And I don't know. Oh, yeah, here you are. You've got it. Great. So sit nicely. You know, help the planet now. Help all of our brothers and sisters. So, first of all, don't even need to close your eyes. You can watch this image behind me. It's like one of the ways you could see the one we call God, really, like a sort of a source of light. So initially just observe what's going on around you. You can hear the sound of the air. You can hear my voice. You're aware of your own breathing, the temperature here in the room. In the same way that you're sitting on your physical seat, just imagine or visualize a subtle seat behind the eyes. Sort of where the control panel of your thinking is, the middle of the brain somewhere. Mentally sit there. And see yourself not as the physical body, but as a spiritual energy, a tiny point of conscious light. A few centimeters behind the middle of the forehead. Just feel that you are that loving, peaceful, conscious energy, giving life to your body, but also giving life to your activities, the whole network that you've created here, of friends and family and connections. As you go to the center of your life and become more stable, this has an immediate impact on your life, the people and things connected with you. So if, as they say, charity begins at home, then just by my becoming peaceful, this has an impact on all the things and people connected with me. now, real time. So I can feel that I'm the one that gives life to the body, but also give life to my roles, you know, the different things that I have to do through the body. It's not that I have to change the roles, maybe some of them, but there are some that I can't change, but I have to change my attitude. I have to change the way that I play them. So I'm the actor, not the role. I'm the soul, not the body. I have a body. I'm the actor, not the role. I have many roles, actually. And just by seeing that, I start to feel that, yes, through those different roles, I actually have a greater role, which is to give benefit some way or the other, to serve others. The reason that I'm with who I'm with and with the things that I have is to bring benefit. Now look at my story, okay, I don't have to invent it, I've been through a lot of things, I've got a lot of experience. But at the same time, the only relevance of the past is that it brought me to this moment. So thanks past, but how am I now? Past is gone, future hasn't happened, I am in this present moment. But how is my state? And little by little, I just become detached from those three things, the body, the roles, the story. And on the screen of my mind, I visualize something like this image behind me. It's not that I go somewhere, sort of a jump of consciousness. And there I am with the one to whom I owe everything, actually, the Creator. I mean, I wouldn't be anything without Him. The one who's been called many names from different traditions. And mentally, I am in front of that one. And so there's a heart-to-heart conversation that's possible. Not like a prayer, but it's like a conversation. What would I say? What would I listen? If I could say what I really wanted to say, what would be there in the conversation? But first of all, there's the feeling of belonging. Secondly, there's the feeling of fortune. And thirdly, there's the feeling of the qualities. If that one is the ocean of love, then the connection is activating my love. If that one is the ocean of peace, then the connection is activating my sense of peace. So the image that comes, and we're going to work with it, especially for World Meditation Hour, We're sort of connected up with the source, of the spiritual source, God, the one who goes by many names. I'm connected with that one, like a power house, and I'm a tiny little lighthouse, and in front of me, mentally, is the whole world, if I can do it. Maybe I'm sitting out on a space station somewhere looking at the Earth. And I'm shining, I'm connected with the powerhouse, the supreme, the divine one, and I am radiating that spiritual power to the earth, which so much needs it. I'm radiating that peace and that love. So keep this image, keep this feeling, and of course if other thoughts come up, don't try to fight them, but just allow them to come and go. And then get back to the task of connecting up to the source and sending out good vibrations to the earth, to all the brothers and sisters, all species actually, of life. Even to matter itself. And I'm gonna go and sit down in the audience now, but keep on meditating and there'll be some images and some music